Welcome. First case up is United States v. Davis. Ms. Hambright.
May it please the court. Brandy Hambright for appellant Terrence Davis. The issue before the court this morning is whether the least culpable or minimum conduct capable of supporting Mr. Davis' conviction under Alabama's first-degree sexual abuse statute necessarily involves the use, attempted use, or threatened use of physical force sufficient to make it a qualifying offense under the Armed Career Criminal Act's force clause. I should begin this morning by telling your honors that in preparation for oral argument today and in review of many cases, it appears to me that both counsel opposite and I engaged in what is probably impermissible fact-finding in our briefs. After review of the law, it appears that that is expressly forbidden by in this particular case because we are constrained by the categorical approach to determining if an offense qualifies as a predicate offense.
Or a modified categorical approach in this case.
Yes,
Your Honor. It all comes down to whether this crime for which the defendant was convicted, sexual abuse in the first degree, whether the forcible compulsion requires physical force up to the level of the ACCA violent felony.
Yes, Your Honor.
Not, and doesn't that pretty much come down to our interpretation of the Poe case?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Tell us about the Poe case.
Judge, the Poe case, followed by Higdon in 2015, set forth a new method by which the prosecution may attempt to prove beyond a reasonable doubt the element of forcible compulsion under Alabama law, and that is that it established the ability to prove forcible compulsion by relationship of the victim to the defendant in such of a position of authority or dominion. In the Poe case, it was a father and a daughter. In Higdon, it was a 17-year-old daycare worker.
But wasn't that, and I understand
yes, ma'am.
Where you're going with this, but it seems to me like when you read Poe that the whole basis for that rule was the court found that there was, based on the relationship, an implied threat of physical force of some type. Am I misunderstanding that? And if I'm not, why is that not sufficient to satisfy the elements clause of the ACCA?
Your Honor, they did, in fact, term it an implied threat. I feel as if
said implied threat of some sort of disciplinary action.
That's correct.
Which could mean you're grounded, which could mean you can't play with your friends, which would mean you can't watch TV.
Right. That's correct, Your Honor. The Poe court said expressly, and I believe this is a quote, there is no evidence that N.S., that is the minor, was overcome by her father's physical force. Neither is there evidence of any express threat by Poe, her father.
Have to be expressed, does it?
That's correct, Judge. And I think that you hit the nail on the head when you stated that the child is in a position, or a child is in a position that it may not necessarily be, they're just, I don't even know if they're in fear, they just feel that they should comply with the directives or whatever is asked of them of their parent. In the child's mind, and in Poe case, I believe that she said she was not fearful of her father. And so I believe that we cannot look to the facts of each forcible compulsion case to determine whether or not there was
When you put the Poe case in the context of the stream of cases, it's difficult to ignore what was quite transparently the driving force here of a of the local prosecutor who simply could have charged and the lay down hand the violation of a crime of sex with a minor under 12, as I recall. Alabama law is a little muddy. But and didn't, and hence the court itself obviously it upholds that eventually. Now, I don't read the later case in Higdon and so forth and their references to Pennsylvania and the psychological relationships thing to soften that doctrine. And your Alabama pattern instruction still require that. So in other words, be straightforward with is I read the Alabama law, the element is still there.
The element of forcible compulsion is still there, Your Honor.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I agree with you. However, I believe that there is an avenue available still since 1991 for prosecutors to take this avenue that allows a jury to make an inference to reach reasonable doubt or beyond a reasonable doubt. And because it is very clear that we have to look to the least culpable conduct under the Alabama law, and that is statutory jury instructions and case law. And I think case law in this case has...
Well, you mean that they... Of course, the juror can take into account in answering the question of whether you have compulsion, the relationship of the parties, et cetera, and to that extent, the draw on the Pennsylvania jurisprudence makes sense. But that still leaves the compulsion as the element, doesn't it?
It
for
does.
Which afford, and compulsion, I think, seems very straightforwardly to be forceful.
Judge, the term is still there. The question is, how can the term be proven, and what is the least culpable way that it can be proven?
The question is exactly, it's under the jury instructions, what was the jury allowed to determine?
And in Poe, they were, judge, allowed to infer that the child was psychologically, felt like she had to follow her father's instructions, despite the fact that she may have and probably did know that it was wrong. She did what her father directed and did not state that she was fearful of him or that she felt threatened in any way.
But I read that as my colleague, I think, does. That's another way of finding that, and that given that relationship, that they found that is a compulsion that it meets the standard. That is force.
And that's true, Judge. And I don't think that we don't know in every case where forcible compulsion is attempted to be used as a qualifying predicate to ACCA, courts are not permitted to look to the facts of every case to determine if there was whether it was a physical threat, whether it was physical force, whether it was a deadly weapon, or whether it was simply a relationship between a daycare worker and a child or a father and a child. And I think that the case that began much of this, Johnson, in 2015, the court stated that based on the Fifth Amendment or based on the Sixth Amendment right to, that under the Fifth Amendment provides that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process, and allowing a sentencing court to go behind or after a trial court in a lower court and make fact-finding determinations is against the Sixth Amendment.
Yeah, no quarrel about that. I think that's settled.
Yeah. Under and further, the elements...
Higdon, the court said that a child's general fear of a parent can suffice as the force necessary to support a rape conviction. The child's general fear of a parent. So that's in particular. That doesn't sound to me like an abandonment of the forces necessary under the statute, but it's descriptive of a particular unique relationship of parent and child. That was the girl's father.
Yes.
Yes. I have trouble extrapolating that into other contexts.
Well, in Higdon, actually, Judge, it was the that was a 2015 case where the daycare worker was a 17-year-old male who had performed acts on young children, and the court followed Poe in allowing that case to go, I believe, to the jury to determine forcible compulsion, which they did in that case. So there was actually, the relationship was much different, and I find it compelling that the court, the Alabama Supreme Court, followed Poe, which presents, I think we can agree, a much different relationship with father and child. But I think that the rationale was the same in that the child felt compelled to follow the directions of a superior or a person in authority.
Under Alabama law, if a 21-year-old male seduces a 21-year-old female by looking into her blue eyes and telling her how wonderful she is and how much he loves her, and they proceed to have sex, that he has raped her?
I think that probably depends on
what it's a psychological, right, emotional relationship and so forth, and it's coercive, it's powerful. But that doesn't, of course not.
Right, Your Honor. And it all comes down to in review of a case by a trial court judge in a district court who is determining whether a offense is a predicate offense under the ACCA, they are limited to, as you know, in this case, finding that the statute is divisible, which our judge did. But in this case, the judge did not go further to determine whether the particular category, or she did find that it did, but without reviewing state law. And so I feel that we fell short of completing the analysis in this case.
Thank you, counsel. We'll hear now from Mr. Brinson.
May it please the court. Just as a correction of the record, in Poe, the testimony from the little girl was that she was afraid of her father. Yeah. And also, I will say that though the language that the Alabama Supreme Court used in that case was a little bit loose in describing it, at the end of the opinion, the court clarifies that that this only provides a mechanism for allows a jury to discern whether there is a rational fear of violence. So it's clear that they are not trying to change the definition.
Well,
of physical.
The problem for you, counsel, is that in the opinion, the court said we like the North Carolina and the Pennsylvania cases better than the other cases, and the North Carolina and the Pennsylvania cases could not, under any circumstance, I think, pass the test of physical force, meaning violent force, force capable of causing pain or injury to another person, for example. In Poe, the Alabama Supreme Court quotes with favor the Supreme Court's of Pennsylvania, noting forcible compulsion connotes the act of using superior force, physical, moral, psychological, or intellectual. Intellectual physical force and moral physical force are to some extent an oxymoron, but what they're talking about there with the difference in age is if you just tell them that this is the way that things are and it's fair and it's natural, or somehow you intellectually persuade a child to do that, that's fine. That's forcible compulsion. And the Alabama Supreme Court, in addition to buying into that decision, similar North Carolina decision, and rejecting the others, said when a defendant who plays an authoritative role in a child's world instructs a child to submit to certain acts, an implied threat of some sort of disciplinary action accompanies the instruction. If the victim is young, inexperienced, and perhaps ignorant of the wrongness of the conduct, the child may submit to the act because the child assumes the conduct is acceptable. And you would agree with me, if the child submits because she assumes that it's acceptable, that's not forcible compulsion. I'm sorry, that's not the use of force in the ACCA sense.
I wouldn't think so, Your Honor.
All right. And then it says, moreover, fear of the parent resulting from love or respect may play a role as great or as greater than that played by fear of threats of serious bodily harm or coercion in a child to submit to a sexual act. That's not ACCA fear.
Well,
is it?
Your Honor, I think that some of that language could be a little bit wider than what the court actually held. Some of that, I would argue, is dicta to the actual holding, which
is very limited
as the court itself explained.
So in interpreting what will suffice for ACCA purposes of state court decision, we're only to look at the actual facts of the case and the result, and we're to ignore whatever the Alabama Supreme Court says.
Well, you have to look at what the actual holding was and what they said it was.
No, that's my question. We look at what the facts, the jury could have found the facts were in that case. The jury could have found that the little girl was afraid. We're not sure, afraid of physical.
That there was an implied threat of physical force.
Although that's not really what the little girl testified to or what they said she testified to. But in any event, we look at that and then we look at the result, conviction affirmed, and that's as far as we go. We don't look. The Alabama Supreme Court has said, besides fear of physical injury or pain or physical action is not even required. But if the facts were there was physical threat in that case and the result was affirmed, we ignore what the Alabama Supreme Court said.
I don't think you ignore what the Supreme Court says.
What it says is not the holding per se.
Right. I think you need to look at the limits of their holding. And they did not change the definition of physical force.
So
they simply said that under certain scenarios that the jury would be permitted to make that finding, and they're not going to say that the evidence was insufficient, given that that was, you know, what the evidence was in that particular type of case.
Just so I know where you're coming from. On an ACCA inquiry like this into what state law requires or what state law permits for a conviction, what's your definition of the holding?
My definition of the holding here is that...
No.
Oh.
We got to make a rule here. What is the holding when it's an ACC inquiry into whether physical force is required, always required to get a conviction under the state statute?
I think you look to what the state has defined the term physical force to be if it's ambiguous. And I don't believe in this case that they changed the definition of physical force. They simply allowed the jury to consider these types of things in determining whether there was actually an implied threat of physical force.
Well, if the jury can determine these kind of things and can convict because there's an implied threat of some sort of disciplinary action, not necessarily physical force, but some kind of disciplinary action, then that indicates that the state crime includes something less than physical force, does it not?
I would argue that that's a different way of describing physical force.
In some cases, the jury may decide
she didn't fear physical force.
Some sort of disciplinary action.
I would think that, you know, I know that many of us, if one of my parents or one of somebody else's told me directly to do something when I was 9 or 10 years old, I would always have an implicit threat of physical force being used. And it doesn't have to be serious bodily injury.
Incorporate the Brinson standard into the ACCA inquiry, whatever you would have feared.
No, sir. I'm just giving that as an example of the court is talking in general.
What I'm trying to do, counsel, is say when we have a state court opinion in which the facts the jury might have construed to require physical force but didn't necessarily have to. They didn't have to believe the young girl about her fears. How do we determine whether physical force is required when the Supreme Court of Alabama says affirmed and says things like some sort of disciplinary action? The child may submit because the child assumes the conduct is acceptable.
Your Honor, I agree that the language is not ideal in this case, but at the same time,
do you find Alabama law outside the local parental relationships that accelerate that?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Do you find that Alabama law, apart from the local parentis relationships in those sets of cases allow a jury to infer, to find compulsion in a way that allows them to find coercion for something less than the physical force or a threat of physical force?
I haven't seen any indication of that. I think that that's the only provision as stated in this case where it would give, as they say, the jury a mechanism to consider that among the totality of the circumstances as to whether there's an implied threat of physical force. I don't think that they said that now that you can use this and find that there's an implied threat of psychological force or that they didn't say that. The jury instructions are the same. The statutory definition's the same.
Do we have the jury instructions in as part of the record that was before the district court in this case?
We don't have the jury instructions in this particular case because it was a plea.
That's right.
So we do have the plea colloquy, but we don't have the actual jury instructions. I did cite to the pattern jury instructions that would presumably be used in these types of cases. And one reason I cited the other three or four cases, one from this circuit and a few from our sister circuits, is that they all involve different statutes that were a lot more vague than the one on its face, at least, that we're dealing with here, where they talked about just putting in fear someone. And so most of the courts said that's the same as an implicit threat. And so there's not really a problem with looking at the way that the statute was actually violated in the typical case.
Of course, the question is putting in fear of what?
Right.
And ACCA fear is physical force.
Force
capable of causing pain or injury to another person.
Even if it's just a slap in the face, but it doesn't have to be.
As opposed to fear of some non-physical disciplinary action.
Right.
I don't like this whole regime. ACCA, it to me is the theater of the absurd that plays every day. But it seems to me under Mathis.
Company with me, Your Honor.
Yeah. Under Mathis and Johnson and so forth, it you look for absurdities like this.
And Your Honor, I would just say that under this, I think that the Poe holding is very narrow and is talking about circumstances that the evidence that the jury can look at. It's not didn't change any definitions. It doesn't change the fear that is supposed to be in the victim's.
If they let juries, even though the facts of the case, it's not. If they allow the Supreme Court to define this offense in a way that's going to define the permissible charge to the jury itself, and if the jury is allowed to. It's what the juries are allowed to find, which ultimately determines what the limits of Shepard and the documents that we can look to.
Right, Your Honor. I think they still have to find the same definition that's in the statute. It's just, can they have some inferences about what went on in certain cases when you have little kids and their parents
stop,
that are.
It doesn't stop there, because what's in the statute has meaning under the state law.
Well,
we start looking at the law of 50 states on this statute.
50.
Settled another circuit, and we have a lot of difficulties with this whole little set of cases.
50 other states in the D.C. and 600 or 800 different criminal statutes in each of them. It's madness. It really, really is.
It is difficult to.
And when you consider the Supreme Court says, with apparently a straight face, that this is the way the Congress wanted it because it would have taken too much time to inquire into the actual facts of conviction in each case.
And arguably, Your Honor, this case would be a lot simpler without Mattis, because Mattis, before Mattis, we might could look and really come to the conclusion that forcible compulsion is divisible. Because it's just two, it's alternative, and it's very clear under the facts of this case it was not even a threat, it was an actual assault.
But post-Mattis,
I can't credibly argue that. Justice Kagan was pretty clear, I think, in that opinion. The cop was a little bit less clear to me at the time, but Mattis was pretty clear. However, even under this scheme, I still think that you can look to this state decision as limited and as not changing the definition. And I would also just reiterate that none of this was brought up before the district court, so we don't have anything on it right now.
Mr. Brenson, you've been up front of us, front of me before, and you always do a great job, but it seems like I always end up asking tough questions to you and maybe a little aggressively. And one of my favorite comic strips from Snoopy was Charlie Brown was in bed one night wondering why some great misfortune had fallen him, and he's looking out at the stars and he says, "Why me? Why me?" And the next panel, a voice comes back from the stars that says, "Nothing personal, your name just came up." I assume your name just keeps coming up on these cases in the U.S. Attorney's Office.
Well, quite often, ACCA keeps me busy. So, but always honored.
All right. Thank you for that argument. Ms. Hambright, 3 minutes.
Sometimes good counsel knows when to sit down and not say anything. Judge, I would just, I did not mention Alexander, the case out of the Ohio, out of the Sixth Circuit from 2017. I don't know if your honors had an opportunity to review the Alexander case, but it was an Ohio law of gross sexual imposition at issue, whether it was a predicate offense under the ACCA. The Alexander case has a quandary, very, very similar to what we have here. The court was looked to its Ohio state law and or case law, and there were some very similar cases to Poe. And that one of the terms that was used was that the finding that the force need not be overt and physically brutal, but can be subtle and psychological. And the Sixth Circuit, I think, felt compelled, if not forced, to determine that statute was not a predicate offense under forcible compulsion due to the limitations they have before them, much like we have. I think that it's clear that your honors don't agree with Poe. The dissent in Poe was also very clear that he felt like the slope was becoming very slippery. At this point, I would argue that, you know, we are where we are and that we cannot, we have to look at the limits and not the fact or the limits as far as they can go and not the facts of each case when we're determining these issues of ACCA. The Moncrief Court.
Counsel, let me ask you about the way that the statute is structured. You have elements 1 and 2, which we agree with. To get where we've been in this argument, we've had to assume that these are elements that. And the first element is subjects a person to sexual conduct by force or compulsion, and the second one is the second category, which talks about being physically helpless or mentally incapacitated and so forth. There is a suggestion that lies out there that one can group these particular the approach of that here is to. And it's gotten Poe thing, obviously, it's only talking about the second element of that and not compromising the first one. But I won't take any more of your time about it.
Your Honor, I don't think that Poe fell within the second one because of the age, if I recall correctly, but I'm not certain. In any event, it did not apply. Well, they were in enforceable compulsion.
The problem was that they mischarged the guy. And they, instead of charging on the basis of age, and then that perhaps is a source of it. That doesn't solve understanding how it got there and how they got there doesn't really alter where we are.
If I may respond, I agree. Okay. Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Hambright, I notice you're court appointed. We appreciate you handling the case.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Next case up is Steed versus Equifax.